I've got to say, whenever I run workshops, when I ask people what is the worst thing on this team, the answer is always the same. It's communication. And I think this world of communication is so big and so vast, and it has so many inherent challenges in it. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about how you communicate, but not just communicate, but how do you communicate with influence? How do you get outcomes through the way that you communicate and show up? And we want to help you solve this challenge of communication. And when I say we, I mean me and my good mate, Shane Michael Hatton, everybody.
This is golf a studio clap. Audience. It's me clapping myself. For those who can't see it in the recording,
it's perfect.
Yeah, I like to do my own introductions.
Well, welcome all the way from London here in Sydney, Australia.
In person.
In person's the best. So let's just go. Let's dive straight in. This is a podcast about making work work. You'll learn about leadership, career growth, and how to navigate those weird work challenges. I run a HR consulting business called Boldside, where I help leaders build epic team cultures. If you lead a team or run a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Shelley Johnson, and this is Work.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Shane, let's talk communication. Now, you've written the book.
The book.
The book, Lead the Room. And we've never talked about it.
I don't think we have, no.
Mm-mm. No, we have not.
Communicate a message that counts in moments that matter.
This is what I want to talk about. How do you communicate a message that counts in moments that matter? Why? And this is not in the questions. So careful. Alert.
Let's go for it.
Why do we struggle to communicate well? Because that is the thing that comes back in those workshops that I run. Everyone always says, well, communication needs to be improved on this team. Why is it a challenge for teams?
Oh, there's two big things that pop into my head for this, because there's one which is communication, which is both my ability to speak and my ability to listen, which is both components of communication. And then there's the other part of communication, which is why do we struggle so much with things like getting up in front of a room and communicating our ideas or communicating our messages. Let me touch on the first one first, which I think is, you know, they did research and they said, you know, what are, you know, the biggest challenges? And I think you would see this in your work as well. Almost every single engagement survey, one of the top things to come out is our people don't communicate. Do you see
yes,
that?
Yes, yes.
We don't hear from our leadership team, or we don't do communication very well. And so what do leaders do? They go, oh, we need more communication. Fire off the newsletter once a day rather than once a week. And so they up the messaging, and they forget that communication is not just tell, tell, tell. Communication is also ask and listen. Mm. And so it's what employees more often than not, when they're doing engagement surveys, when they say we want better communication, is it's not saying we want to hear from our leadership team more. They're saying we actually want to be heard by our leadership team. We want our opinions to be communicated and feel like they're listening and they're responding and they're taking action to all of those things. So first and foremost, I think that is a big one, is not just more tell, it's actually being able to allow people to feel heard, seen and valued.
I love that as well. It makes me think of dialogue.
Yeah.
Like versus the newsletter, the like more Teams channels, more yes. Slack channels. I'm like, no, please. No.
Yes, when they're doing the engagement surveys, I guarantee you the person's not answering that question going, how do we do communication, thinking, you know what, I could do with another Teams chat.
Totally. They're like, come on, add me to more. Yes. Like I just want more notifications on my phone. So let's talk about that then, because a lot of what you mentioned, like the challenges with getting up and yeah. speaking, and I think we'll get to that. But I want to dig into this idea of communicating with influence. Mm. Because for me, I think that's one area that we struggle with, where maybe if we feel like our voice isn't heard, is it about the way that we're speaking up, or is yeah. it about kind of the culture of the organization? And I think there's a few things, but I'd love to know, we can't really, if we're in an environment right now, we feel like the culture doesn't maybe allow for people to speak up. Mm. that might not be, if I'm an employee and I'm in an individual contributor role, I might not be able to necessarily influence that directly. But what I can influence is the way that I communicate ideas and the way that I speak up. So I'd love to know, what are some strategies for people who feel really nervous to speak up and say something, but they feel like they have an important message they need to communicate within their organization?
It's really hard, and acknowledge that hard place for this person to be in. And if you're listening and you're in that place, just acknowledge that's a pretty challenging place to be in. In Lead the Room is centered around three big ideas for any message to be communicated. And I'll do an exercise with you that I do in my workshops because it's always fascinating. We have to pretend for a moment we don't know each other. So let's pretend for a moment we don't know each other. Imagine that I rocked up to your house this morning in my car, and I roll up and I knock on your door and you answer the door and you're like, hi, can I help you? And I say, oh, hey, my name's Shane. Hey, I was just wondering, would you mind just jumping in the car? I'd love to take you for a drive. Now, on a scale of 1 to 5, Shell, 5 being, of course, 1 being not in your life, where would you put yourself on a scale of 1 to 1? Okay. I always tell people this exercise often hurts my feelings because some people say like -1. So I usually ask them to hold up on a hand and people do 0s. I'm like, that wasn't on the scale. Okay, so obviously you want a bit more information, right? So let's imagine I knock on your door and this time I say, oh, hey, how you doing? My name's Shane. Actually, where's one of your favorite places to go? Like, where would you typically go? Like, favorite place?
I like going to Tippo in Melbourne for Italian.
Okay, so imagine you're staying in Melbourne. I've knocked on the door of your hotel and I go, hey, how you doing? My name's Shane. Heard you love Tippo. They've got a really good deal on Italian right now. Come jump in the car. Let me take you for a drive to Tippo.
Like a 13-hour drive.
13-hour drive. House. So on a scale of 1 to 5, you were a 1 before. Where are you now?
Yeah, definitely still a 1.
Still a 1. Okay, hasn't gone backwards.
And I'm thinking, yeah, it's probably gone backwards.
Exactly. Okay, so it's gone. So you want a bit more information. Last piece of information I'll give you. So this is actually really important to know. So I grew up in Queensland, and in Queensland, we lose demerit points when you get fined. So I haven't lost a single demerit point in my life. Not only that, I'm a very good driver. So people often will get in the car with me when they get out, they say, Shane, if you're an Uber driver, 5 stars. I felt so safe. I felt so secure that you were such a good driver. On top of that, I've done 2 defensive driving courses in my career, and I was top of my class in both of those. So I'm an excellent driver. Very good. Where are we at now? 1 before?
Still a 1.
Still a 1. Okay, Shelley, why? Why is it a 1?
Because I don't know you.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the outcome of all of this. Again, it's the same answer everyone gives you. They go, I have no idea who you are. And so when we talk about communication, people will say, oh, it's all about your message. Get your message really, really, really strong. I'm like, your message is kind of like, where are we going? Like, that's the message, right? We're going to Tippo. You don't care that we're going to Tippo. And it's like, well, just tell them how to really refine their communication skills. Teach them all the hand gestures. Teach them how to, like, you know, do power poses and things like that, which is kind of like just teach them how to drive the car. But you don't get in the car because you know how to drive a car. You don't get in the car because we're going to Tippo. You get in the car because of who I am. And you want to know, do I trust you? And the foundation for every great message and being able to influence someone, because influence is about change, it's about movement, it's taking from where we are to where we need them to be. The goal of every great communication message is to move people, and people don't want to get in the car with you if they don't trust you. So trust is the fundamental element to influence.
That is so good. Because how do you build that in a moment? Let's envision right now, someone's listening, they've got to present an idea to the exec team.
Yes.
They don't know the exec team very well. So let's say they're in middle management, it's a large organization, they have to go up to the scary exec boardroom, meeting room and present something, and they're like, I've never stood up in front of these people. Mm. So they don't really know me. How do we build that then quickly?
The right question, but also the wrong question. Because here's the thing, right? So when I talk about this, knowing that it's who you are, I call it positioning. And it's not about brand. I think it's about positioning, because positioning comes from a Latin word. It's the word panere, which basically means how you place something, right? It's to place something. So positioning is mental real estate. It's how people place you in their mind. So if you think about how you're positioned, it's when your name comes up in conversation, what's the thing that pops up in people's mind, right? So if I say Subway, you think...
Footlong.
Some people would say footlong, some people would say eat fresh, but whatever.
I've got to say, I worked at Subway and I used to sneak the cookies frozen in the freezer. Like, do you know the cookies?
Yeah.
They come from...
You would sneak eat them in the freezer?
Yeah. They were frozen and it would be like you know, cookie dough, and I would be in the freezer eating them. Like, and I'd probably get through like four of those double chalk anyway.
Okay. Not exactly where I was hoping to go with that, but that's okay. But okay, let's think of something else. I want you to say the first word that comes to mind when you think of Jacinda Ardern.
Prime Minister of NZ.
Okay, good. Keep going. What else comes to mind for you? Like, what characteristics come to mind for someone like Jacinda?
Kind.
Yeah, kind.
Empathetic.
Right? Empathetic, yep. Again, most people, depending on where you listen to this from, maybe New Zealand has different perspectives on it, but generally, globally, no, she's known as someone who's kind and empathetic and warm. And so all you're doing is placing these things in your mind, and they're the things that come up for you.
I got another one. if you did ask me, the burgers are better.
At McDonald's.
You know, at Hungry Jack's.
At Hungry Jack's, yeah. So again, brands pay ridiculous amounts of money because they're trying to occupy your mental real estate. That's what they're fighting for, yeah? So here's the thing, right? So I would suggest that regardless of whether the people in the room know you, they already place you. And you can influence a person before you get in the room. And so I would suggest, most people would say, how do I build rapport quickly within the first few minutes of speaking? And I go, if you're waiting until then, you've missed your opportunity. And so let's rewind and go back to all of the moments leading up to, let's say you're speaking at a conference, let's say you're speaking to an executive team. Let's go through the moments in which people could get to know you. So imagine you've never heard of me before, Shell. What would be the very first thing that you would do? If you found out I was coming on the podcast today, what's the very first thing you'd do?
I'd look you up on LinkedIn.
Yes, yes. Follow us on LinkedIn. But I would probably go to LinkedIn. But there's probably one thing you'd do before that. And it's probably you would ask someone who knows me.
Yes.
You would find someone who knows me, right?
Actually, and that is how I found out about you.
Exactly.
Because our mutual friend Rowan told me about you. Like, so you're right. Yeah, you find someone
you
who knows.
You talk to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to imagine that your audience is talking to someone about you long before you're in the room. So your executive team is probably talking to your manager. And they're building their perception off you based on their manager. So the manager might say before you're in the room, oh, hey, we've got Shelley. Shelley's going to come today, talk to us about this. Shelley's on my team. Shelley does this, this, and this. So they're already placing you before you've walked in the room. It could be that they've only heard about you through your staff intranet. They've looked you up on your staff intranet, or they've talked to someone. So I would suggest the first thing that if you're going to influence, like we're talking about the journey towards influence, is you have to find your advocates in your organization. So who sits next to you every single day? What do they say about you? What does your manager say about you? What do your friends say about you? What does, you know, someone else's departmental leader say about you? They become your advocates because they're the people who speak about you when you're not in the room. So that's the first one. What would be the second thing you do?
I would look at, if I was an exec, I'd be trying to find out a little bit more about your work. So I'd look at anything that you'd done. Let's say you'd written a report for something. Let's say you'd put together something for the agenda, I'd be reviewing that.
Yep. So you look for essentially anywhere we can find you, like your work, your presence. So typically I would go to your LinkedIn profile. I'd look you up on Google. I might try and even stalk you on Facebook or Instagram. Let's be honest, we all do it. Like, how many times have you gone to meet someone and you're like, I've seen their LinkedIn profile, but I don't want to see their Instagram profile because I feel like Instagram is a more real life for them.
Yeah.
And so you look them up. So what happens when you Google your name? I remember someone I was coaching or working with at the time, they won like a beauty pageant when they were younger. So when you Google their name, the first thing that comes up is all their beauty pageant photos. So again, like, can't really control that, but at least being aware of that someone's already now creating a set of assumptions based on what they find out about you online. So I say to people, the bare minimum that you can do is keep your LinkedIn bio updated. Just go to your LinkedIn profile, look at your bio now, and say, does that reflect how I'd like to be known? Because your leadership team will look you up. External stakeholders will look you up. If we go to proximity, you'd probably look you up online. You'd probably engage with you in some way, sending emails, talking on the phone, talking on Slack channels. You'd look at some of the responses from that. And then when you're in the room, even before you get up the front of the room, people are watching how you respond in the room. Are you the person who just hides off on your own, disappears off into a green room in a keynote conference? Are you a person who is, you know, like, or unapproachable, or seems a bit like you've got a sad or a scowl look on your face? Like, people are watching in all these moments. So if you think about this journey to influence, how you're positioned, think about, okay, who's talking about me? What are my advocates saying? What are people finding out about me when they look me up online? What's the experience like when they're engaging with me via email or over the phone? How do I show up into a room? All of these things will enable your ability to influence people in the room with a message long before you've even stood up to speak.
Okay, so let's say we've done all that work on positioning. Yes. Now what happens when we're needing to kind of craft a message and speak up with confidence in those critical moments?
Yeah. So I would suggest when it comes to crafting how you now deliver a message, most of the way we influence people is by, number one, understanding and becoming aware of the problem sets within the room, the problems that people are experiencing. So most of the time, there's two conversations taking place in a room. Well, there's kind of three. There's the conversation that you're having out loud as a speaker. There's the conversation that your room is having back with you by what they're saying. And there's also the third one, which is the unspoken conversation in the room, the things that they're thinking, but they're too scared to say. And I'll give you a good example of this. I had a person I was coaching to kind of present their ideas to an exec team, and they were basically trying to communicate this new dashboard platform software. But at the same time in the room, there was a lot of internal politics going on between the exec team. And if there's someone in the room who's thinking to themselves, oh, this person's gunning for my job, they're going to try and make me look stupid. Imagine for a moment this guy shows up or this girl shows up and presents a, you know, a presentation on a software that you don't understand. Do you think that as a leader in that room, you're going to say, excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying here? Of course they're not. They're going to hide that. What they will often say is, you've made that too complicated to understand, or you need to go away and do more work and come back to us. So understanding the problem sets within the room, the two problem sets I call boardroom, bedroom, which is boardroom is like, what are the people, things that people feel comfortable talking about out loud? What's the external conversation? And the bedroom, it's what's the things that keep them up at night. So what are the real problems, the things that they experience? And so as you're going into the conversation, having those in the back of your mind allows you to, number one, come prepared with answers, and B, address questions before they're asked, and also C, address the unspoken questions within the room. And if you can do that, people are much more inclined to listen to what you have to say because you've been able to address not only a spoken problem, but an unspoken problem as well.
So how do you, one of the things for me when I think about getting up and sharing, maybe speaking up in a meeting or hopping up in an exec team and presenting something, is when nerves take over and they limit your ability to influence. So when we get nervous, and I can picture myself a few times over my career getting super, super nervous where I felt like really nauseous, like sweaty hands, like feeling like shaky. And I always think about those first few minutes and how they can either fuel the fire of nerves and make it worse, or you do something to kind of like get past those nerves. Like, what would you recommend to anyone who struggles with that?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is it's important to distinguish between what is a perfectly normal threat response versus feeling anxious and nervous. I can't remember. I wish I knew the movie, but there's this, it's either like We Bought a Zoo or one. This is a zoo movie of some descript, but there's this moment where I think the father's talking to the son and he has this crush on this girl or whatever it is. And he basically says, all you need is 30 seconds of insane courage. Like, and once you push through those 30 seconds, the rest of it will follow. And so often what happens when we perceive nervousness, it's a perfectly normal physiological response to a threat. So our brain struggles to distinguish between what is a physical threat and a reputational threat. So if you get up and you feel like there's a reputational threat, and this is why it often feels harder to present up than it does down. So if you're presenting your team, you very rarely feel nervous. Mm-hmm. If you're presenting to an executive team, you feel terrified. It's because the reputational threat is, the perceived reputational threat is higher. And your body can't go, oh, is this a, you know, at the primitive part of our brain, is this a lion trying to eat me? Or is this, you know, the potential threat to my reputation and credibility? It can't distinguish between the two. So your body naturally goes into a fight or flight response, which has a couple of factors. One, your digestive system starts to shut down. So when you're trying to think about fighting a bear, again, physiological response, you're not thinking about eating food. So your body goes, well, we don't need your digestion right now. Let's focus on your extremities. Your vision changes. So you go from being short-sighted to far-sighted. So when you're, you know, threatened, you're looking for things in the distance. You're not looking for things up close. So if you're holding notes in front of you, it goes blurry because your range is focused on long distance. Adrenaline starts flowing through your body. So you start to shake and you might start to sweat. So all of these are perfectly physiological responses to a fight or flight reaction. So when we see that, we often go, our secondary response is, I'm nervous, I'm anxious, I'm worried, I'm scared. Well, actually, no, you're having a perfectly normal response to a threat reputation issue. So you have to start getting control of those internal narratives, which is, okay, why do I feel like my reputation's threatened here? Okay, I've got great advice, I've done the work, and you start to reframe some of those internal narratives and give yourself 30 seconds of insane courage, your fight or flight response will wear off and then you'll start to find yourself back in that normal flow again.
I think one of the things that I've loved about like that first opening few minutes that I learned from Matt Church, I went to one of his speaking courses, was begin once and then begin again.
Yeah.
So the idea of like starting your presentation and then starting again. And the way that he did that at his session was he got up on the stage. There was a lot of people there and he said, did a like little quick welcome. He said, I want you to write down on your book, what's one thing you really want to learn from this? And then everyone wrote down and then he went, okay. And now we get started. And after that, he got started. It was like, he began again. And he was talking about how that lowers the nerves because you start once and then you get to start again almost by opening with a question and getting them to think something through lowers your nerves. And so I've used that in all my workshops. I almost always start with a question that gets them thinking and gives me space to kind of like recenter and ground. And I really liked that advice of going, you know what? That little opening bit, we feel like we need to have this masterful, like eloquent speech prepared that we just like TED Talk style, but instead like going, hey, I just want you to think about one thing you really want to get out of this today.
Yeah.
Write it down for me.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear from a couple of people. What do you want to get out? Okay. What do you want to get out? Cool. Today we're going to be talking about X, Y, and Z or whatever, however you throw in, but just to get you out of your own head and thinking about what does this group want from this session?
Yeah. It could be something as simple as you going to an exec meeting. And again, this is the other thing to remember is that those people are often time strapped, they're time poor. So being able to say, hey, in a moment, we're going to talk about this, this, and this. If there was one thing that would make this conversation most helpful for you, what would that be? I'm going to give you just 30 seconds to have a conversation and then let's kind of identify the biggest things. And then they feedback back to you and you go in your head, okay, yeah, we're going to tick all those off. And then going straight into what you've got to do, again, gives you that little bit of space and that breather, but allows you to start again. So it's a really helpful tip.
I'd love to know in like those smaller kind of scenarios. So we've talked about the exec meeting, getting in there, like recognizing that your fight or flight response is normal, like when you go into that kind of adrenal sympathetic nervous system. What advice do you have for when you need to speak up and it's one of those moments where you feel put on the spot? So let's say you're in a meeting context and someone says, hey, Shane, what's your input on this particular thing? You're like, oh no. How do you speak up in a way that's influential when you're thinking on the fly?
Yeah, I think...
Like right now.
So I often find questions are a really helpful way to give yourself the buffer that you need. So you might, or contextualization, say, hey, I'd love to make sure that I've understood this correctly. Can you maybe give me a bit more context behind the question? Or could you give me a bit of an idea of what you would like to hear from me in this moment? So almost putting it back on the person to either just give you that extra 30 seconds of contextualization or a bit of a buffer or asking a question can give yourself that space. This is the thing. I think sometimes we fear being able to say, oh, actually, I'm not ready to give a thorough response on this. And there's kind of two parts to this. I'm an introverted thinker, so I spend a lot of time in my head. So when someone asks me and puts me on the spot, it makes me feel a little bit anxious. There's two ways you can do it. One is just to say, hey, I've got a few thoughts on this and I'm trying to just gather my thoughts at the moment. Do you mind asking somebody else and coming back to me? Just give me a couple of minutes and just let me like get a couple of things clarified in my head first, if you're an introverted thinker. Or the alternative is actually to say, to preface what you say as like an externalization of some internal thoughts. So to say, hey, look, I feel a little bit put on the spot with that question, but let me tell you what immediately comes to my mind. And forgive me if it's a little bit scattered because I'm still trying to contextualize this in my mind. My first thought is blank. And usually they will give a response to that, but it gives you enough time to be able to keep processing and come back to it at the end.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about internal and external processes. If you want to grow in your career, I just wanted to remind you about our book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Glenn James and I have written this book to help you with any kind of career crisis, but also those things that you want, like getting a promotion, making more money, moving into a leadership role, or if it's time to quit your job. You can find our book wherever you get good books from, or you can listen on the audiobook, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Now let's get back to the show.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
One of my managers was an introverted thinker, as you described, so an internal processor, and she would use a similar thing a lot. She would say, these are my raw thoughts.
Yeah, great.
And I always loved that as well, because the cool thing with the way that she would do that is that she never spoke up with, like, this is a definitive statement or fact that you cannot challenge. Yeah. So she was always able to be really, like, she's like, these are my raw thoughts, but happy for you to kind of challenge them and speak your thoughts into this kind of space, because it's not set in concrete, it's not set in stone. And I loved that approach to how she did it. I want to ask on the flip side, so we talked about the internal processes and some of the challenges that they have. I'm a verbal processor, and one of the challenges that verbal processors have is that we talk too much and we ramble and waffle on. And I think that is a real detractor of influence. And I think it was Robert Greene who said this on a podcast on the Diary of CEO. On the Diary of a CEO, he said that the people with most power in a conversation aren't the talkers, it's the listeners.
Yeah.
And he talks a lot about the power of listening and speaking less and listening more. And for me, I've noticed, like, as someone who loves to talk, how do I listen more and activate that listening skill? What advice do you have for anyone who relates to me and they're like, but I'm a verbal processor and I just want to talk out all the ideas, but then I struggled with rambling?
Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm not a big over talker in terms of external processing. Although you might be listening to this podcast and thinking, yeah, right, you're talking heaps. I can answer a question. So, but typically I like to process things in my head. I've talked to a few people like this. Typically I often find people who are processing are connecting ideas externally. And it's like they are going through a mental filing cabinet and pulling out files. And for an internal person, they're doing that all in their head. Often I find people who tend to overtalk is they will go to the topic or the filing, you know, the filing cabinet, and they'll go to the topic and they'll open it and they'll be like, oh, there's not anything in there. And so they'll go to another filing cabinet and then try and connect those two worlds. And I think about, if you were to visualize this metaphor as like you're in a helicopter and you're flying over a scenic route, it's you're almost flying across and then going down into destinations. And part of it is being aware of, where do I need to be in the helicopter and have the perspective, and when do I need to lower down into the detail? So if you were taking in the car and you were riding in a car, you would see a very different perspective as if you're in a helicopter. So having phrases like what we just talked about, like, I mean, the short answer, this is the kind of phrase that I gave to them, which is, the short answer is this, and just give the short answer. And it's almost like you're in the helicopter above it. And if someone says, oh, tell me more about that, then lower the helicopter and go down into the car. And so then it allows you the space to kind of share more. But if you can start the conversation with, I mean, the short answer is this.
It's so funny. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about the times where I've been like, long story short, and then I go into the longest story ever. Like, and then 6 minutes later, everyone's like glazed over and their eyes are like, this was the worst story. I think for me, becoming more concise has been a challenge, and becoming less, what's the word, verbose with your words? And so how do we get to this place of as a verbal processor, giving space. And so for me, one of the things that I've had to work my butt off, and I'm like proud of myself in this, I have worked my ass off to ask questions.
Yeah.
Because I know that for me, that the counteractive or the antidote to oversharing and overtalking is asking good questions.
Yeah.
The podcast has helped with that because I'm interviewing people like you and get to ask you questions. But if you are someone who associates you with being an oversharer or an overtalker in meetings, start your habit of asking questions. So if you can get really good, and there's Chris Voss in his book, Never Split the Difference, he talks about calibrated questions. Go and read that book. I would encourage you to do it. And there's some amazing questions that he has that I've like filed away that I'll use any moment. And he calls them what or how questions.
Yeah.
Instead of asking why questions, if you can use what or how, you'll fuel the conversation and you'll be able to kind of start to shift that dynamic where instead of over talking in meetings, you become the person that generates a really good discussion. And to Robert Greene's kind of quote of people who are the most influential are the people who are outer directed.
Yeah.
So they're people who are interested in others. So me being interested in you and asking you really good questions, that makes me a more influential person.
Mm.
But me kind of talking and talking and talking and talking like I am right now lowers like the impact and the influence. So if I was to label one skill that has really helped me, it's been the ability to learn to listen. And I'm still learning this. This is such a thing that I still need to develop all the time. But the ability to listen and listen deeply without needing to respond has been massive.
Yeah. I have a friend, Chad Littlefield, and he often talks about, he said, Shane, questions are like keys. And he said, but they're not like car keys and they're not like house keys. They're like those janitor skeleton keys. It's one key that opens multiple doors. And that's the thing, the power of a question is that I could ask you one question. For example, I could ask you the question, you know, what's life teaching you right now? And you could say, well, I mean, it's been pouring rain and it's been teaching me that I should pack a umbrella everywhere I go. Or I need to be better prepared. But I could ask you that question. You could also say, well, recently I lost a relative and I've been learning that life's really short. And you could answer that question in 50 different ways and have very different responses to one question. So I think you're 100% right. It's almost like learning a language. You improve your vocabulary of asking great questions. And as you start to do it, you learn what questions really can unlock great things for people. And being able to ask that can influence in a way that being able to tell someone something never could.
I love that. And I love your thing about up front about tell, tell, tell. Instead of, if we want to be an influential communicator, we need to move from this tell, tell, tell to this dialogue and seeing influential communication as conversations rather than speeches.
Yeah. Yeah. Ask and act. Most people just want to know is, okay, great communication is not just give me more messaging. It's actually, are you listening to what I have to say? And then by feeling heard, I feel heard because you've actually acted on what I've told you. And I guarantee your engagement score will shift around the communication question. If you listen to what your employees say, take action on what they, or the questions they've asked or the things they brought up, and then communicate back to them what you've done, as opposed to just telling them what you're going to do, it'll make a massive difference.
Shane, lots of people will want to learn more about this. And I know we've only scratched the surface of your book, Lead the Room. So we're going to put a link into the show notes. If you want to level up in your communication skills, you need to buy the book. We'll put it in the show notes. People are going to want to connect with you. You are on LinkedIn. How do people find you?
Yeah, search for Shane Hatton. Let's hang out on LinkedIn. Let's make it all professionally official.
And also on Instagram, all the things. Like, get on all the socials.
Well, to be honest, I'm pretending like as though they're not already going to be looking up on all the profiles and the Googles and all the things.
The brand positioning.
It's the positioning. Yeah, that's what we talked about.
Awesome. Hey, well, if you enjoyed this episode, give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify and share it with a friend if you got something out of this. That helps us get the pod out there and make more of these conversations with lots of verbal processing. Awesome. Thanks for hanging out, Shane.
Shell, 10-star review from me this time.
You're the best.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast.
Before you do anything meaningful with your money, you need to be able to control your money. I can help. The Glen James Spending Plan is a complete spending plan budgeting system that will show you how to manage your money. It includes a downloadable spreadsheet that will tell you how much to put into what account each week and you will get control over your money within 2 pay cycles. Thousands of people have used the Glen James Spending Plan and it is now free. So download the Glen James Spending Plan and enroll today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.